Hey guys, welcome back to the Spates Water Lad podcast, and what an episode to have Spates on board for as I sit here with a true legend of the game, with the Spates in both of our hands, ready to bring you another episode of Water Lad. Super grateful to have Spates on board for season four. Good on you, mate. And Water Lad fans, you do not have to wait any longer. The new Water Lad tees are now out. All you need to do is head over to waterlad.com. Go get yours. So if you enjoy the podcast and you want to be a true lad, go get yours. Also, the great Pure Sport are back on board. And as many of you will know, Pure Sport was founded by former professional rugby player and two times former Water Lad guest Grayson Hart, who was a true lad and is doing incredible things with Pure Sport in the UK and has even now brought it here to New Zealand shores with a mission to create superior natural products and build a community centered around optimal human performance. I've been using the product for years and I fully swear by it. They use the highest quality products and test them rigorously to ensure that they're 100% safe for all levels of competition. And they've just launched a new product called Ultra Ashwagandha, which has proven to reduce stress, increase energy levels, and improve concentration. I'm on it right now, and look at me go. So if you're interested, head over to puresport.com and go and check it out.
Hi guys, Tim Bateman here from O Studio. If you're trying to get some more control over your own time and money, and therefore looking to open your own business, O Studio might just be the option for you. Look, wellbeing is a $4.1 trillion industry worldwide, and we've found a model that works. So the key for us now is finding the right people to join the journey. If you're interested, fill in your details at ostudio.co.nz/lad and I'll get in touch.
What a lad. Well, today I'm lucky enough to be joined by a true icon of New Zealand rugby from the late 90s. He was a crowd favourite every time he ran out at the old Carisbrook Stadium while playing for either Otago or the Highlanders. He then moved over to Scotland to play international rugby, basically within a week of moving there. And the best thing about today's guest is that everyone I've spoken to has described him as one of the best lads you'll ever meet. So I'm stoked to have him on. He is, of course, Brendan Chainsaw Laney. Welcome, mate.
Mate, what an intro. What an intro.
Is it Chainsaw? Most people call you Chainsaw still, or is it moved on to Boof?
To be fair, Boof most of the time.
Yeah.
And it was just a bad haircut at school.
Was it?
Yeah. Yeah, and that sort of stuck around. Other people probably say it's something else, a bit of a dumb bastard, but Buffer's probably what everyone sort of pretty close to me calls me.
And what about, how did Chainsaw come about? Was that just a more of a rugby thing?
Yeah, it really was. It was sort of, it was 98 when it all sort of kicked off, and Reuben Parkinson's got a lot to answer for. He was the one that sort of got it back going down in Dunedin, because at the time, remember Paul Cook?
Cookie.
Yeah, he played on the left wing for Otago, 100 games, scored.
Legend.
Absolute legend. And terrific guy, just a champion guy. And was very good after dark as well. That's a bit I enjoyed. But, man, he could score some tries. But he used to run down the sideline when he scored a try and shoot people.
Oh, yeah. Like Shooter Stevenson type.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And no one really did anything like that when we were down there. And Cookie was the last guy, you see. And Rube sort of thought, well, why don't we get it started again? And he sort of said to me one day, and we were mucking around, he said to me one day, he said, oh, why don't you, you know, I'll stand like a log and you chop me down like a chainsaw or something.
Yeah.
Jokingly. And nothing was done, because that was at the start of the year,
yeah. 98.
Nothing was done. No one even played up, but right through the year, about halfway through the year, there was mayoral elections on. And round the side of the ground was signs, Chainsaw for Mayor and Suki for Mayor and all these other guys for Mayor. And there was this Chainsaw one.
And you hadn't done the
hadn't
celebration.
Even done it.
Oh,
hadn't even done it, mate. No, it had just come out of nowhere. And I thought they were talking about Goldie.
Oh, yeah.
Because we played a midweek game. I think it was Bay of Plenty or something. And it was on the side. And I remember saying to Rubes, I said, mate, see, they've got a sign about Goldie. And he was like, I don't think it's Goldie, mate. and it was me. So we went to the pub that night. And we're in the I think it was the Oriental store, might have been the Fat Lady's Arms then, and $2 drinks.
Oh, mate.
Couldn't go past that. So we hooked into a few, and there was quite a few of the Scarfies in the corner, and one of them walked past me, and I knocked his arm and pumped his drink out of his hand. Oh. $2.
It's down the drain.
$2. I can replace that real quick. So I said, "Oh, look, I'm really sorry." And he said, "Oh, no worries. Chainsaw and carried on walking."
Yeah.
And Ruben heard this and he went, "See, I told you." And that's how it stuck. And then got towards the sort of, I think it was either the last game of the round or semi-final or something. And Rube said, "Mate, if you score a try, you got to do something."
Yeah.
And I said, "Oh, what do I do? You know, I look bloody stupid." And, of course, I did. So I did it, scored a try, pretended to change, start a chainsaw, and yeah, it stuck like, yeah, proverbial to a blanket. So, and if I'm honest, mate, if someone stuck one in front of me now, I wouldn't know what to do. So it's been a weird ride, I must admit. And I, like, with Maz and I, my wife and I have gone in for a restaurant to have dinner or something, and there'll be someone from the other side of the room, "Chainsaw, how you going?" And, of course, you're standing around like a bit of a dick waving to someone, and you don't know who they are. And but it's been cool. It's been fun. Like, people, you know, well, they've certainly still remember it.
Yeah.
But the, you know, the older you get and the more grey hairs I get, the yeah, buff sort of seems a hell of a lot better. It's probably more a hacksaw now, Jimmy. So yeah, it's been a weird ride, mate.
How many times did you actually do the chainsaw celebration? Was it just twice?
Twice that year, the first year.
Yeah.
And then I buggered off to, I think it was my last game I did it. Last game we played here in Christchurch.
We played
the final. And we scored a try under the post, and we actually got in front. No, we ended up getting beat by Canterbury, but and I did it then.
Oh,
and
yeah,
that was probably about the last time we ever did it, because when I went to Scotland, because they didn't really know much about it.
Yeah.
Until some bugger turned up with a chainsaw at a Scottish thing. He turned up to a bloody press conference with this bloody chainsaw.
He said,
"Oh, can you stand on a, come outside and stand on a tree stump?" And
I said, one of the media guys?
The media dude.
True.
I said, "No way, mate. Not happening."
I parked it.
Not a chance. So, yeah, no, funny. It's been really cool, but, yeah, it's certainly, it's probably worn its name yet.
Back to Buff.
Back to Buffer, mate, yeah.
Fair enough. Well, one thing I do like to do on this podcast is go through the journey from the start. Mm-hmm. So I'm always keen to hear how it was like for you growing up. So understand you're deep south, deeper than I first originally thought.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, I actually lived in Bluff.
Right down there.
To about just before I turned 5.
Oh,
my dad
true.
Was a policeman down there.
Oh, yeah.
So mum and dad decided that when I got to about 4 or 5, he got a transfer to Temuka. So we really went up the tree, and away I went. So I first started going to school in Temuka at 5 years old. So we lived across the road right beside the police station, across the road from the soccer field.
Yeah.
Gunyan Square it's called. In the middle of Tamooks. So I, for the first sort of 5-6 months, sat on the letterbox there, busting my nuts to get across the road and play football.
Yeah.
And I ended up going over there. The old man stuck a pair of boots on me and sent me across the road, and I played soccer till I was about 10.
Oh, was it 10?
Yeah. So it wasn't till, and of course the rugby club is right behind the police station.
Yeah.
And Dad got involved with the rugby club down there. And so I ended up going down there with him one day when I was about 9. And he said, "Oh, you just wait over there." And I was hanging around with a couple of mates, got in the line, and next minute I was playing rugby. So I got home, and the old man got a massive tune-up because he said the old lady went right off the deep end.
My
boy's not playing rugby.
Yeah.
And I ended up flagging soccer and playing. I spent most of my time offside anyway. I was waiting until the ball to come to me. But,
were you good at soccer?
Oh, I quite enjoyed it.
Striker.
I wasn't massive on defending, but I was pretty keen to score a goal. So I spent most of my time down that end, leaning on the goalpost till the ball come down. So
yeah.
It was probably the best game for a kid to start off playing.
Yeah.
And then, you know, especially with me, I ended up, you know, goal kicking and all the rest of it. And,
yeah.
And, but Temuka, there was so many other sports to play as well. It wasn't just football. There was always something to go and do. Mm. So it was quite cool.
And how did you go when you first gave rugby a crack? Did you love it from the start?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's like any small town. You played everything.
Yeah.
You know, you go to school, you were bull rush. There was cricket, there was rugby, there was soccer. There was
yeah.
And there was the same kids playing those sports and all. in all the, you know, small towns, and Temuka was no different. Mm. So, yeah, rugby I was playing at school anyway. So I'd play soccer on Saturday and rugby for the school.
Oh, yeah.
So to change over probably wasn't too much for major, really. I just got chucked on the wing and ripped into it. Mm. So it was cool.
And when did you think it was potentially something you wanted to do long term?
Well, I boxed for about...
Boxer?
When I was about 12, and I did 12, 13, 14, and then I started getting to that point with boxing where it was either boxing or rugby.
Oh, yeah.
And I couldn't do both. You go and play a game. I got called out one day. I played rugby in the morning. We went up to Fairley, played rugby, and I was meant to box at night. And if I got injured, they would have had to call the fight off because, you know, finding guys to fight around the country wasn't that easy.
Yeah.
So my boxing trainer found out, Ernie Woods, and he gave me a dressing down on the way to the boxing fight that night, and he said, you've got to make a choice. So I ended up picking rugby.
Yeah.
And, you know, getting punched in the head wasn't a great great idea, really. So, yes, I chose rugby.
Were you good at boxing, though? You must have been
I got the gold gloves. Did you? I was gold gloves. Uncontested.
Yeah.
No one else turned up, so I was pretty good with that. Got third in New Zealand champs 1 year. I think I was only about 62 kgs or something, dripping wet. But
what age grade was that?
So I was around about 14.
Yeah,
14. So it wasn't really that heavy, to be fair, but things have changed, obviously. But it was cool. I love the boxing part. It was the training. I was probably the fittest I've ever been.
Yeah.
And so I'd do that. Train rugby, you know, we did a lot of training for boxing,
yeah,
a heap of training. So, I was probably, like I said, I was the fittest I've ever been, and it was just an enjoyable sport. And at amateur level, you're not really getting smacked around too much,
yeah,
you know, it was pretty safe. You know, you get one in the snorer, they pull it up pretty quick, and I got my fair share, hence the reason buff, probably. But yeah, so.
Have you ever been tempted to get back in the ring? Or
I've done it once.
Was that a Fight for Life type setup?
It was, yeah. It was down in Invercargill. It was Fight for Kids. They were fundraising down here in the south for the Children's Hospital. Jeremy Winders rang me up one day and said, I was on the sideline, I was commentating. And he came up and pulled my headphones apart and he said, are you going to fight me for Fight for Life? And I said, no way, not a chance. I said, for a start, you're crazy. You're bigger than me, and I don't want to do it because you're my mate. So anyway, about 2 weeks later, there was another guy, Pup Shepherd, who played for Southland, and I owed him a favour, and he rang me up, and he said, you're doing it. And I was like, shit, I can't get out of that one.
Yeah.
So I ended up going and doing it. So I trained for about – they trained for about 3 months, 12 weeks.
Yeah.
I trained for about 7. And because I was really late to the piece, and I wasn't the fittest man in the world, and Jerry had lost 14 kgs, and he came out. I didn't realise how big the event was. It was 3,000 people at the stadium, and I was the main fight against Jeremy, and he came out with this guy, this kid. It went pitch black, and he comes out with this kid holding a Swede. And I was like, what the hell have I got myself in for? Copperhead Rhodes on this. And out he walks and he's bouncing around. And if you've known Jeremy Winders, who played for Southland for years, he's like his ADD. And he's bouncing around anyway. And I was thinking, what the hell have I got myself in for? So, going out and fighting, I didn't enjoy it.
Did you win?
I did win.
Oh, you won.
But it's only because Jeremy. Plot twist. It's only because Jeremy bloody didn't put his hands up. He thought he was trying to put a show on and he forgot to put his hands up. So, Jerry, he's a beautiful man.
Did you knock him out?
No, I give him a good bleeding nose. So, I'm not going to say it was a big punch or anything. I think he just walked into it. last fight for me.
You wouldn't do it again.
No, I got asked to do that Fight for Life. No way.
Yeah.
Nah. Not a chance. Nah. Quite happy to go out and watch, but
So then you chose rugby, and then from there, what was your sort of pathway?
Well, it was sort of wasn't a lot. Temuka High School wasn't a big school for rugby.
Mm.
So I sort of went into Timaru Boys High.
Yeah.
I played all my rugby for Temuka at the club. Great club, had a fantastic time. I was very lucky they were a real good club to be involved in.
Mm.
One of the better clubs around South Canterbury. So and I went in school to Timaru Boys, and there was two guys there that one guy in particular, a guy Grant McFarlane, was my first 15 coach, but he was actually started off being my form teacher.
Right? Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Macca was is a champion guy, and he said, I want you to come in and play first 15 rugby. And I was playing for Temuka under 18s at the time.
Yeah.
So he said, we want you to come to town. I was like, shit, what do it? I not? So I thought, well, bugger it, I'm going to go and give it a go. And it was the best thing I ever did. Went in, played first 15 rugby for Timaru Boys, and, you know, made the South Island secondary schools. And, yeah, it was just a cool time. Best rugby I probably ever played, I think.
True.
Yeah, first 15 was fantastic.
Most enjoyable.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. You know, you got the real tribal feeling around it, the hackers, the... Mind you, we didn't have a lot of Samoans or Tongans in our team. There was a lot of white guys doing it.
You would have been leading it, wouldn't you?
I was at the back, mate. Don't you worry about that. But we had a really good side that year, and we won four out of five games there of inter-schools.
True.
I think we scored something like 1,000 points in our club season.
Oh, yeah.
And scored about some ridiculous amount of tries, something like 160-odd tries. So we were a pretty handy team, and that's no disrespect to the teams we were playing, but we just seemed to be going pretty bloody well.
Yeah.
So.
What position were you at?
I was on the wing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was purely on the right wing.
Scoring tries for fun.
Yeah, it was below that. I was getting about four or five a game, which was crazy. Sometimes I didn't have to do a lot, to be fair, but that was just the way that Grant McFarlane and a guy, Kevin Glogan, he ended up coaching South Canterbury and the Hollanders there for a wee bit. But that's the way they played. They loved to play the game.
Yeah.
So we threw it around from everywhere, under our own sticks. We hardly kicked.
Yeah.
But it was, just cool fun.
Yeah. And did you make New Zealand schools or anything like that?
I didn't, I didn't make New Zealand schools that year. And South Island Secondary Schools was about as high as I got school-wise.
Yeah.
And then I came back and went straight back to my club for Temuka. So and spent my first years out of school, which was 92, sitting on the bench. I think I played about three senior games that year.
Really?
I sat and watched pretty much the whole year, which was frustrating as hell, but I learned a lot.
Yeah.
And it made me pretty hungry.
Yeah.
But also made me appreciate the fact that when I did get in there, I had to play bloody well and stay there.
Yeah. So, was your ambition to be a footy player back then?
To be fair, no, it probably wasn't in a way. I just loved being involved in the game and the club, and it was just especially in a small town, Temuka, in fact, the game on Saturday was such a big thing.
Mm.
And I think, any guy who's played in a small town, it became a real vocal point. The rugby club was big, everyone went and watched, and it was just a big day Saturday.
Mm.
And, I'd go down and referee rugby juniors in the morning. I'd go and watch my sister play netball in the afternoon over at the netball court. So I'd spend most of my day, or pretty much the whole day, down at the rugby club.
Yeah.
And then we'd stay, have a couple of beers there, have a couple of jugs, and away we go home. So that was the way it was in a small town.
Yeah, mate, it's crazy that it was so hard for you to get a run for your club team.
Yeah, I spent
schoolboy talent coming out of.
Well, and it was a bit like that. I think it was a schoolboy earn your stripes.
Different back then.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah, and most of our team were, a lot older. They were sort of that 26, 27, 28.
Yeah.
And all of them were in that age group. So, it wasn't as if there was – I was the youngest by quite a bit.
Yeah.
It was quite a bizarre feeling, actually.
Did they look after you? How were the courties and initiations?
They were, I still had to do them. Yeah, still had to do them. I was never good at drinking a jug in a hurry, but I learned pretty quick, yeah. I was probably more the guy that stayed all night. But I
didn't last drink it.
Didn't drink it in a hurry. So, I was really lucky in that professional rugby happened a bit later, and I got that sort of amateur rugby, and I think it was some of the best rugby.
Mm.
Not that I didn't enjoy the professional stuff, but I got a really good mix of it.
And so then you did eventually start playing for South Canterbury. How did that sort of come about?
Yeah, well, I actually played for South Canterbury when I was still at school.
Oh, did you?
Before
club footy?
Yeah, I hadn't been in a senior team yet.
True.
And Kevin Glogan was coaching South Canterbury at the time as well. And we played against – my first game was against the New Zealand Colts.
Oh, far out.
Yeah. And it was the year 91 when John Hart had them. Yeah. And their team was awesome. Like, I think I marked Damien Cowie.
Yeah.
I think the only time I touched him was after the game when I shook hands. He scored two fantastic tries that day. I remember trying to tackle him. I think I hit him with my head and knocked myself out. That was – yeah, I remember going
and off. Played on?
And, no, it was – I was gone. But and then I played the next day in a first 15 game. There you go.
Oh, far out.
None of this head knocking yeah. out. I was splashed on the face and into it again. So,
true.
Yeah, but they had an outstanding team, that New Zealand Colts team that year. And then they went on and beat Aussie by 60, 70 points, I think.
Oh,
it was.
Wow.
Yeah, Mark Ellis, Lee Stenslis, they had an awesome team. I was packing myself, to be fair. Yeah.
So you were what, at school? So you were what, 17?
Yeah.
Yeah, 17, 18. Yeah. Far out. Mm. And then you play, how many games do you end up playing for South Kent? You played a few, eh?
I had about 45, I think it was at the end. Yeah, and then I finished in, my first game was 91, sorry, and then I finished in 94 and went down to Dunedin.
What inspired the move? How did you end up down there?
My dad's side of family's Dunedin anyway.
Oh, yeah.
My grandmother lived there, my uncles all lived there, but I went on a sevens trip with Otago. With Arthur Stone, and we went to Sri Lanka, of all places, would you believe? Yeah, and away we went, and he was the coach, which was a loose word. Yeah, Stoney was an absolute champion man, but he enjoyed the nightlife too. And the sevens trip was bloody great. We had a lot of fun, but and we were playing against it was some really weak opposition, is probably not the best word, but there were certainly, a lot of Asian countries, and we had such a good time. We had a great pool. But while I was over there, he said, "Oh, do you want to come to Dunedin, come and play for Kaikarai?" I was like, "Oh, yeah, I hadn't really thought about that." And by the end of the trip, I said, well, I'll come down and say good day and have a look around. And I went down there with my dad, and we sat down there at the pub at the Normanby Tavern and had a beer, and I went up to the club rooms, played a bit of touch that night on the Wednesday, and had a good look around. And by the end of it, Dad said, "Well, what do you want to do?" I said, "Yeah, I'll come give it a crack." He goes, "Well, worst case scenario, if you don't like it, you get in the car and you come home."
Yeah.
So I did, and never looked back.
So there was no promises from Otago or anything like that? This was just purely just club footy at the time?
No, it was just to go down and play for Kaikarai.
Yeah.
I did have a meeting. I went and stayed with my uncle, and my uncle was the head of traffic officers down there. He was a chief down there, and so he worked in the same office as Gordy Hunter.
Oh yeah.
So he actually, I got down there on the Sunday night, and he said, "Oh, Monday morning, Harbour State, you got to be in South Dunedin Police Station and meet Gordon Hunter." Mm. I went, "Sorry." He goes, "Get your ass down there." I said, "Mate, what are you doing that for?" I said, "Mate, I'm just here to, play club rugby." He goes, "Get down there."
Yeah.
So I had a meeting with Gordy, and he walked in the office, and I remember he had a big wall planner on the wall, but it had positions.
Yeah.
And I was packing myself, because for a start, it was Gordon Hunter. One eye, I didn't know where to look. And he walked in, and he didn't say a lot.
Yeah.
He only said about five words to me. And I was crapping myself.
Yeah.
And he had, first, second, centre, da, da, da. And I was down as centre, because I'd played for the New Zealand Colts that year at centre. And he had Mark Ellis, Phil Gordon, Jason Wright, a gap of about three in me.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how far down I was.
Yeah.
And he said, "Well, if you want to be up there, lad, you got to work hard." Okie dokie. That was the end of the meeting. So I went out in my car, went home, and that was the meeting I had with Gordy Hunter.
Right.
So I knew where I stood, and there were some pretty handy footballers around the target at the time, but I didn't go down there for that. I was just come down for a bit of a life change, and that just happened to be part of the gig.
You must have worked hard.
Yeah, well, I sort of suppose like anything, you go down there and you sort of want to prove yourself, and I did. I was from a small town, but it was all bright lights, big city for me. You know, yeah. I was going down there and I was meeting all a whole lot of new people, and it was a pretty cool experience. But it was sort of like going to varsity, but not going to varsity in a way.
Yeah.
I went to all the parties. I had a great time doing that. But it was just a cool town.
Yeah.
And, you know, bigger than Temuka, obviously, and just everything was happening. And the rugby scene down there was great. I suppose like anybody, you know, going to a bigger city, it was just cool. And the guys I met at the club were great people. And I got involved with Otago Sevens first, and then played a bit of Otago B. I reserved in 95 for Otago for the semi-final and stuff, so I was sort of in and about it, but I wasn't fully in the side.
Yeah.
And then of course Mark Ellis ducked away to league, and there was a few boys sort of left that year.
Yeah.
And so I got a bit of a chance next year, so...
Yeah. So you weren't studying down there. What were you doing to survive?
I was selling piss behind a bar.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
For $2.
Right up my alley. Yeah. I was at the Cock and Bull out in the South Dunedin.
Oh, yeah.
And behind the bar there.
True.
Which I think everyone's got to give it a crack see what it's like on the other side. So I did that for about, probably 18 months, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
Working behind the bar.
Full-day shifts.
Yeah, I was doing full-day shifts. And they used to have a breakfast on for $2, all you can eat.
Oh, $2.
Honestly, right. Mate, they'd be knocking at the door, getting in. I had to open up, get them all in there, and then they come in and they get their pokey money in and go into the pokies. And
oh, yeah.
They'd be drinking booze at 8 o'clock in the morning. It was unbelievable. Yeah. Right up my alley. It was great.
So when you cracked Otago, was that first when Mark Allison stuff had left? Is this when you got your first – was it contract? Was it professional then?
No, it wasn't. 95, it wasn't professional. 96, it sort of started to head that way.
Yeah.
And I was sort of right on the cusp of being involved and not being involved in that 95 year. And like I said, when Mackey headed away, Phil Gordon headed away as well.
Yeah.
So I sort of got a wee bit of a sniff and was loving every minute of it.
Yeah.
I played about 4 games that first year I went down to Dunedin, and a couple of midweek games, got my first cap. And I was thinking sometimes, what the hell am I doing here, you know,
yeah.
Because it was all bigger, faster, you know, you're playing against guys you've seen on TV.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, you know, I'm from, you know, Temuka, what the hell am I doing here? So yeah. It was a bit of a change, but once again, I was keen to prove myself, and the next year I sort of got into their target team and strung a few performances together.
Yeah.
I think what happened too was Greg Cooper actually made a bit of a comeback. And in 96, when he played a couple of games, and he pulled his groin. So I was actually reserve fullback.
Oh, yeah.
And when he hurt his groin, he was out pretty much for the rest of the year. So probably one of the reasons I got in there was Coops was out. So,
opportunity.
Yeah, well, it purely was, just a chance.
Yeah.
And so I grabbed it and ran with it. So.
How good. And what was that amateur scene like? Obviously, you were in both sort of eras. Yeah. What was it like back then? Like
awesome.
Yeah.
There was probably – the enjoyment part was probably the bit that was – you know, you still had to play, you know, really important rugby. You played bloody hard. You got stuck in – and, you know, you were playing first division rugby.
Yeah.
But there was that enjoyment part to it because it was still, you know, amateur.
Yeah.
And you were playing for pride, you know. You were playing to for the you know, logo on your left tip.
Yeah.
And that was what it was really important. But then there was the enjoyment afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, Otago was exactly like any other, you know, province. They enjoyed a beer afterwards, probably more than we should have. but we enjoyed it as a team, and that environment was really bloody good.
Mm.
And that's why Otago was probably, well, I loved it anyway.
Yeah.
And a lot of guys that went there stayed.
Yeah.
And, you know, your John Timmons, your Aaron Pines, they set the scene really in those early 90s, and I was lucky enough to sneak on the end of that and carry on.
Yeah. Was there an instant change when it went professional, or
No, there wasn't actually. It probably – purely from my view, it was one of those ones where they changed to professional rugby. It became, right, you're in here at 9 o'clock or 8:30 in the morning, you don't leave till 5 at night. We were doing that 5 days a week. You were training three times a day. Really? And it actually got to the point where they realised, shit, we can't do that.
Yeah.
You know, we can't do that to people's bodies. We can't do it mentally. And we were bashing the hell out of each other too. You know, you'd go to training and I was a professional tackle back here for a while. So, you know, it took us, you know, I think it probably took New Zealand rugby about 4 or 5 years to figure out what professional rugby looked like in training. Yeah. and how that all looked. So I think by the time I sort of left to go overseas, I think New Zealand rugby actually figured out that, you know, professionally we had to do it differently.
Yeah.
And they have.
Mate, that's interesting, eh? It's interesting that they went that hard.
Oh, we used to snot the absolute pus out of each other. And, you know, like 2-hour trainings. And
5 days a week.
Yeah, 5 days a week. It was crazy. You get to Friday, you'd have a captain's run and you'd be absolutely knackered, you know. You couldn't get through it. But it was just the way that we thought we had to do it.
Yeah.
But things changed pretty quickly, you know, and the guys, you know, I suppose they listened to the guys. And there were some big personalities in there as well.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of guys like, you know, Brownie and Goldie and that, and Tane and Crusher, you know, they listened to them, which was fantastic. Because we wouldn't have survived caring for what we're doing.
But it was the sort of glory days of Otago back then as well. I remember Carisbrook was always seemed to be fully packed, you had a lot of success in your time as well. So
yeah, we were lucky. We were probably lucky. Like I said, I sort of tacked on the end of that professional, the early 1990s with the way that Otago played. And they got a lot of people into the ground because of the way they played. You know, they threw the ball around from anywhere. They scored tries from anywhere. And Carisbrook was a special place. It was hard to explain to people who have never been there, and you'd sort of run out before a game, you just get this wave off the embankment, and it just was a cool place to play. And the Scarfies got involved, and you know, it was bloody cool. Yeah. It was really cool. And you know, now they've got that stadium down there, and I'd love to be now to play in that.
Imagine the chainsaw down the wing down there.
Outstanding fun. Outstanding fun. Everyone's just on top of you. But Carisbrook, there was just something special about it.
Yeah.
It was a cool place. And I suppose, too, you know, going back to what I said earlier, it was about, you know, playing for the province. There's a real pride in playing for Otago, regardless whether you came from the province. Because like I said, a lot of guys came down from varsity, but they stayed. You know, Dunedin became home for them. Yeah. But it was the way that the Otago were playing. You know, there was times where we didn't win a lot either, but we went out there and threw everything at it. You know?
Yeah. And you mentioned a few of those players that you played with. Any one of them really stand out as just someone you just loved playing with?
Oh, look, to be fair, if you were going to pick an individual, I was once again really lucky. I think the year 98 when we won things here, won the NBC, there was 9 guys in the All Blacks.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that was unbelievable. There was the car yard out the front looked like a Ford car yard. There was more, Calvin Middleton and I lived together. We'd pull up in his Mitsubishi. It looked bloody stupid, but you know, like, there was some fantastic players. You know, Tane, there was Crusher. Our forward pack was the only 2 guys in the middle row with John Blakey and Brendan Timsey who didn't make the All Blacks. So, you know, the front row was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, you had Antoine Oliver, Carl Hoft and Case Mews. But if you were going to pick a guy just purely individually who was, you'd have to pick Jeff Wilson. He was just... he was an outstanding rugby athlete, not just rugby player, because he could play cricket. He was a bit of a sport billy. He'd do everything. He used to hate playing cricket again. You know, when you're way on tour and you get in and you want to be down the hallway playing, he'd turn up and you'd be, oh, screw this, we're out of here. Because Goldie, he'd either get you out or he'd battle day. So you're like, oh, mate, I'm not playing.
Done.
I'll see you later. I'm out of here. Yeah. And he used to get shitty if he got out and all that sort of stuff as well. But he was that good, you know. But he was like that as I used to love playing with Goldie because of the way you sort of knew what he could do. But he was an outstanding guy putting in space, and you could rely on him at fullback. He was outstanding under the high ball. But, man, what a guy to have in your team. Yeah. So we were, once again, pretty lucky. And he was one of a few, but you'd have to say he was the one.
And what about that front row? They seem like an intimidating bunch, especially as a wee back.
That's exactly right, mate. Yeah. Well, when, you know, like Carl Hoft, he came down from Te Aroha. I mean, when he first turned up, I was like, whoa, look at the size of this bugger.
Yeah.
The biggest one was Case Muse. I mean, when Case turned up, he'd come from Auckland. Mate, he was a monster. Yeah. I was like, wow, look at the size of this guy. and you know, he'd had a few issues with his calves, and he'd had to have operations and stuff on his Achilles. And so he'd come down, started, but he'd sort of had a few problems. And then that next year, 97 and 8, man, he was awesome.
Yeah.
He really was. And that's when he made the All Blacks, obviously. And then we had, Anton Oliver. Well, Hatch was the quintessential front row. Tough, strong, fast, and didn't take prisoners. But in once again, we had those three guys together.
Yeah.
Made a pretty formidable front row. Not very attractive. I'll probably get a smack in the head for that one. But just terrific guys as well, on and off the pitch.
Yeah, that's cool. And so, what about why the move to Scotland? What brought that one about?
Well, 2000. I was sort of sitting on the bench a little bit in 2000. And I sort of looked at him, well, I'm 26, 27, and I looked at going over to Bath, to be fair.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh,
there was. I got offered a contract to go to Bath. I actually got asked to go to the Warriors if I wanted to go and have a go at Cricket League. And then I thought, well, one, I'm going to have to tackle.
So I was like, what position did they see you as a winger?
Oh, as a winger. Yeah. And I said, like, nah.
Was Mark Ellis still there at the time?
He'd
put the good word in for you.
Well, he was, you know, he turned up ended up being a double dual international. And I was like, mate, that's pretty impressive. But I just, I love watching the game.
Yeah.
I just never thought I'd be good at the game. So, and I still had a few things I wanted to do. Rugby was, I just love rugby.
Mm.
So,
had you played any league?
No. At school, lunchtime, but but no, and tackling wasn't high on my list of things I wanted to do either. So, I thought, nah, bugger that.
Yeah.
And rugby it was, and the opportunity to go overseas was the chance to go and have a look around.
Yeah.
And but I went checked out Bath first. And just didn't quite work out. And then an offer came to go to Edinburgh. And I had a Scottish grandparent. So I had what they called a grandparent's entrance certificate.
Mm.
So it got me the chance to go and work there without having to have worry about passports and all that sort of stuff. So Edinburgh it was. And away we went. With no intentions or thought process of playing for Scotland.
Really?
No, I just was going to play for Edinburgh.
Oh, that's crazy.
I had no preconceived sort of ideas around what was, that could happen.
No conversations, nothing
like that.
Yeah.
And it was just a because I had my Scottish heritage
and
away I went. So it was a bizarre couple of first weeks.
Yeah,
for sure.
it all happened really quick, didn't it?
Hindsight. Probably too fast.
Yeah.
So my wife and I got off the plane. We got taken to our flat, walked in. We, dropped off by 3 o'clock in the morning. We're sitting up in bed going, the old timelines all out. Time clock's all out. So we were sitting there going, geez, what are we doing here? And then the next day I went away to do physicals. So, went to a doctor, did all that. And while I was driving back with the head coach of Edinburgh, he said, the Scotland team's rung up and they want you into the Scotland A team. And I knew the All Blacks were there. They were on tour.
Yeah.
And I knew they were playing Scotland A because I was keen to go and have a watch.
Yeah.
Because I knew the guys. I was trying to get tickets. So they were playing in a place called Perth. And I got rung up and said, you're going to play for Scotland A at fullback. And I was like, okay. Righto, I'll give that a crack. So I went away to training. I said to my wife, look, I'm not too sure when I'll be back. I presume I'll be back after the game on Tuesday.
Yeah.
So it was a Tuesday night up in Perth, about 40 minutes out of Edinburgh. So away I went and played against the All Blacks. Stood there, watching the All Blacks do the haka. I knew all the guys. Paul Miller was standing directly in front of me. He'd helped me shift house. Simon Maley was in front of him. It was a bizarre feeling. And of course, I was sort of joking around a wee bit, you know.
Yeah.
Not that I wasn't taking it serious, but I just couldn't believe I was standing. You know, I knew those 22 guys, but I didn't know those 21 standing beside me. You know, I got room with a guy, Alan Jacobson, yeah, Chunky. He ended up playing about 100 games for Scotland.
Yeah,
he was from a place called Preston Pans. For 3 days, I roomed with that guy. I do not know what the hell he said because they've got a different dialect, and I just nodded at him and go, "Yep." Because it's gold, and try and sneak out type thing. And it wasn't until about 3 or 4 years later when I was just about to leave Scotland, he goes, "You know, I thought you were the rudest prick in the world." I said, "What was that?" He goes, "Mate, for 3 days, those first 3 days, he never spoke to me." I said, "Mate, I didn't know what the hell you were saying." I ended up being a great mate with us, but I honestly didn't have a clue because he had that thick, really thick accent, and he was coming out with words I'd never heard in my life.
Yeah.
So I must admit, the first 3 days in Scotland were very bizarre. And then finished the game, got a tap on the shoulder, and they said, "Oh, we want you to go into the Scotland camp."
All right. Did you play well? You must have.
Oh, well, yeah, not too bad. I didn't really set the world alight or anything, but yeah. I was played fullback. I'd played 60 minutes, and they took me off the field. And I was like, "Oh, that's cool. I can do that." And I was jumping out of the shower, and Dougie Morgan, who was the manager of the team, come and tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Grab your bag and you come with us." So away I went on the Wednesday. That was Wednesday. Went to training. Thursday was my wedding anniversary. I said to Ian McGeechan, I said, "Is there any chance I might be able to sneak home and just have my wedding?" I said, "My wife doesn't even know where I am."
Yeah.
So he was really nice and let me go home or back to a flat. And said to my wife, I said, "Look, I'm not too sure when I'll be back." And the poor girl was like, she was wondering what the hell we were doing here. And of course, the worst part was when they named me, all the press came out and said, "Why have we got this Kiwi turning up and why has he gone straight in the team?"
Oh, yeah.
And which was totally fair enough because I'd only been here 5 days.
You're writing it. You're agreeing.
I was into it. I was like, "This is fantastic." But then when it sort of came out in the paper and everything, and like I said, a bit of hindsight, it probably wasn't handled that well. But
yeah.
I was never going to say no. I remember ringing my dad going, "Mate, they've picked me for the Scotland team." And he went, "Well, get into it."
Yeah.
I was like, "Well, yeah, okay." So that was my mentality. I was going to go out and enjoy it. And I think I'm about the only guy that's played the All Blacks twice in a week.
That's a stat.
You know, like, and so here I am again, standing in front of the All Blacks, and they're doing the haka. And once again, I knew these 22 guys, but I didn't know these guys.
That's so crazy, yeah.
And you know, I'm standing looking, and here's Jonah and Tanner. It wasn't any winking or joking then. I was thinking it was a bit tight. I was sweating big time. So it was a different killer fish, that's for sure.
Yeah. So did you feel all that pressure from everywhere else, all the media and stuff? Did you feel even when you're playing in that game?
Yeah, probably did a bit.
Yeah.
Well, I knew I had to perform because – and the guy that dropped – well, drop's not great. They just put me in, and I don't like the word drop because he was outstanding because he'd got player of the day the week before.
Oh yeah,
against Tonga. Yeah. And so they dropped him. I was like, "Man, that didn't make sense." But anyway, I wasn't going to question it too much. There was a guy, Derek Lee. He ended up being in the Edinburgh team.
Yeah,
great guy. So I ended up getting alongside him and took him for a beer and said, "Hey, look, mate, we're going to be teammates." I said, "This was not my decision," type thing, and it wasn't handled right.
Yeah,
he ended up being bloody great about it, but it was a. I knew there was pressure.
Yeah,
and there was pressure just putting the Scotland jersey on anyway. It was Test match rugby. I didn't think I'd ever get there.
Mm.
You know, small guy from Tomoka playing Test rugby and playing, you know, the All Blacks. Wow. It was pretty full on, and you know, what an experience. But yeah. I knew I had to pull my finger out. I think I come here with final scores about 45-12 or something like that. But I remember before the game, just the Scottish boys were sort of, you know, getting into it and it was warming up and stuff, and I was sitting there going, this is crazy. What the hell am I doing here, you know?
What was the anthems like? Did you get stuck into Flower of Scotland?
It's funny you say that because we had a press conference the day before and they picked us and they named the team and I'm at fullback and we went into the press conference And the guy says, "Oh, do you?" One of the Scottish reporters goes, "Oh, do you even know this flower of Scotland?" And I bit back a bit, and I said, "Well, do you know the national anthem of New Zealand?" He goes, "No." I said, "Well, mate, I've only been here a couple of days, and that gives a break." So I managed to tap a foot along. I did try and learn the words, I must admit, but it was a pretty and Murrayfield, you know, 68,000 people there.
Yeah.
The singing was awesome, and it was a pretty proud moment. I must admit, I was very. Yeah, you know, I go back to my grandmother. It was all my mum's side of the family, and I went and made a big effort to follow my heritage through, and you know, I was very proud to play for Scotland. It was a pretty cool moment.
Yeah, who did you lock eyes with in the haka?
Well, I was looking at Jonah, but it wasn't the smartest move in the world. So I tried to fight Andrew Mertens. I said to Mertz after the game, I said, "You're way at the back." He said, "Yep." Mertz is a cracking man. Yeah. No, I must admit, it was one of those ones where, and like I said, there's a real aura that comes off the All Blacks anyway, especially when they're standing there in their black uniform. But to stand there in front of them when they're doing the haka, it's you know, like I said, their first time round against Scotland A was a bit different. This one was Test match rugby, and it was like, she's powerful stuff. And I must admit, there wasn't a lot of I wasn't trying to look at too many people in the eye, because Jonah was like, the eyes were bulging for a start. So I tried to stay away from him as best I could.
Did you end up being one-on-one with him at any point?
I had a couple of times I got him, and it was, when I say got him, was I got his ankle, I think.
Hit in the spokes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I tried to stay away from him as much as I could. Yes, he hung in the game quite well, but it was the last sort of 25, 30 minutes where they sort of pulled away. I marked Jonah quite a few different times.
Yeah.
And man, he was just a freak. Yeah. And he had such a big gait on him. You know, you go to tackle both legs, but
one could only get one.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So you end up just hanging on. Yeah. Sometimes you didn't even have the ball, I'd just grab him.
Oh, mate, that's such a crazy story. Did it get any easier for you playing for Scotland, or did the pressure come off you, or when did you feel like that came off?
I don't think it ever really did. I think that Kiwi, you are a kilted Kiwi tag. I remember speaking to Glenn Metcalf about it, and Marty Leslie was the same, and talking to JL, John Leslie as well. You know, that they expected you to perform all the time, and that's fair enough. You know, we were playing for an adopted country, and they expected big things out of it, and not only for Scotland, it was also for your club side as well. You know, so that was cool. I didn't mind that too much, but the media over there are pretty brutal. They don't muck around.
Yeah,
you know, there was some pretty full on articles written.
Yeah.
And I remember going home there not long after all this, you know, a couple of months in, and my wife said, "Shit, what have we done? Have we made the right decision here?" I even questioned it sometimes. I was like, Christ.
Yeah. Should have gone to the Warriors.
At least if I'd missed the tackle, no, you know, it wouldn't have mattered too much. But these guys, they were the press over there are pretty brutal. So it took them a while. They calmed down a little bit, but it always got brought up.
Yeah.
You know, it was always, Brendan Laney got pulled into the, you know, team after being there for 5 days. Well, wasn't my choice, mate.
Yeah.
So I just thought the only way I could make that change was by doing what I could control, and that was going out and playing and getting involved with the people. I enjoyed that part. That was the bit I really enjoyed, was meeting the Scottish people. They're awesome.
Yeah.
Just great people. And I had a lot of fun doing that part.
You would have been glad there was no social media back in those days.
Yeah. Probably most of my rugby career, to be fair, mate. Yeah. I'm so glad there wasn't any of that around. It would have been dangerous.
Yeah. So all this media back then, all this negative media you're getting, the newspaper.
Absolutely.
The news.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And rugby was, especially in the Scottish newspapers, was about 4 pages in.
Oh, yeah.
You know, football was so big over there, but anything that was in, a very negative. And it was, and that wasn't just for me, it was for rugby in general.
Yeah.
You know? And in Edinburgh, my first year, we didn't win a lot. I must admit, we struggled. Wasn't until the second and third year. Because I was lucky, I had Toddy Blackadder there.
Oh, yeah. How was that? How was
bloody
that
great. Home, yeah, Blackadder, yeah, Toddy's a bloody legend, champion man. Not very good at directions. I wouldn't give him a map. Maybe he had a car, and I distinctly, and this is no bullshit, he had a car given to him because he was an All Black captain. And I had to get a bus with my wife to his place so we could take him in his car because he was too chicken to go and drive anywhere. So we sat in the car. My wife was – I was driving. My wife's on the mat. None of this stuff.
Yeah.
And he's sitting in the front seat like, where we going? Where we going? So I'll never forget that. Blackadder is the shittest when it comes to directions. So I can confirm that.
That is good stuff.
Yeah. But I was lucky that he was there. The other guy that was fantastic over there was Marty Leslie.
Oh, yeah.
And Marty had been there for about 3 or 4 years for me anyway, but and he was real established – but just a bloody champion man. And he was good fun,
yeah.
Really good fun. And he was great for us too, cause, and my wife, because he got involved and he showed us around and he was just a genuine good guy.
Yeah. How did your wife find living in Edinburgh in the end?
Yeah, loved it. Absolutely loved it. Got involved with a bit of work.
Yeah.
Started running a nightclub and the membership side of things.
Oh, yeah.
And they're called the Opal Lounge, right in the middle of town.
You got back behind the bar?
Not behind it.
In front of.
Quite a bit in front of it. Got called out a couple of times too, don't worry.
Did you?
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah. Oh, I had one night I got called out. Perhaps you had gone back to New Zealand for a wedding,
yeah.
Mate's wedding, and I couldn't go because we were playing rugby. So I said, well, where you go, love? She'd been away 5 weeks, and so I knew I had one night left before she came home the next day, and I had to pick her up at like 8:30 in the morning or something, from the airport. So I thought, oh, well, we're going to have a couple. And we played in Ireland that night, and we got back about 11 o'clock, and then I thought, I'd better go to the Opal Lounge and duck in. So I'd had a few. But the Opal Lounge was it was downstairs, and I'd gone down, about 13 stairs down, and I'd gone in good, but coming back out was a bit of an issue. And I had my hands in my pockets, and I tripped on about the second stair up, and I face into the stairs. And when I went down, I was like, shit. I turned my head and I cut myself open, and the bouncer boys came down and picked me up, and they were laughing away. It was hilarious. And they took me to the top. I knew them because they knew Miranda.
Yeah, you're there every week.
Yeah, hey, Buff, you're right there, Buff. And they sent me on my way, and I'm like, yeah, mate, I'm good as gold. And I woke up in the morning with a big black eye and a cut and everything. And so I went away to pick up the wife, and hadn't seen her for 5 weeks. Hey, sweetheart, how are you? Yeah. She goes, oh, hey, what did you do? Oh, rugby. I buggered off the training on the Monday, and she went to work, and I got a text, and she went, you're a lying bastard. I was like, oh, I've rang her up. I was like, what am I lying about? She goes, I've just seen the CCTV coverage of you crashing into the stairs. I was like, shit. So I didn't live that one down for quite a while. So every time from then on, every time I got to the top of the stairs, the old bouncer was like, you're right there, mate. You want me to give you a hand down? You know, like.
Well, that'd be good footage to see.
Oh, mate, caught out big time, mate. I've tried to delete it.
Oh, that's good stuff. So you obviously loved your time in Edinburgh, playing in Edinburgh as well, did you?
Yeah, loved it. Yeah, we were, I think the year 2004, we got in the quarterfinals of the Heineken Cup, which
this,
was the
this
first
the
time.
Big try against Toulouse.
Yeah,
I've seen that everywhere,
Toulouse
mate.
One,
what a try that was.
Yeah, the Toulouse one. That was nuts because even Black, Toddy came up to me afterwards. He said, Intermac, you pulled away from Intermac. I was like, I think he was about 35. So when you say pulling away, he probably wasn't that keen on chasing me. But we ended up getting into the quarterfinals. We ended up playing Toulouse at over there.
Yeah.
And it was the first time a Scottish team had got into any semi final, quarter final. So it was pretty big for you, didn't it? And Scottish rugby. So it was great. And we had a really good team, really good bunch of guys, made lifelong friends with most of them. They're just good people. And but we played a really cool style of rugby. And the guy Frank Hedden was coaching at the time. He wanted to play expensive and throw it around. Now, no disrespect to the guys we previously probably battled with that a wee bit, but. Toddy brought in a few different things that obviously the Crusaders done.
Mm-hmm.
I brought in a few things that the Otago Boys or Highlanders had done, and it just sort of mixed well with the guys we had. We weren't a big big front row or big locks or anything like that. So we had to move it around a bit, and we weren't really that big in the back. I was one of the bigger backs, so we used speed to move it around and chuck it around and our school level, and it was really successful.
Yeah.
When we come up against some of the bigger teams, we probably battled a bit, but we, you know, especially up front. But yeah, it was an enjoyable time because we were playing rugby that everyone was enjoying, but we also enjoyed it off the field as well. Yeah. You know? Yeah. They're a great bunch off the field.
So how did it all end in Scotland for you?
Well, 2005 was if I'm honest, it was probably time to go. I'd fallen out of favour is probably not the word. I hadn't been picked for the Scottish team. Matt Williams was in there coaching, and I wasn't playing my best rugby. Mm-hmm. I was moving into second five. I'd been put at second five. I wasn't a second five's bum, to be honest. I wasn't enjoying it.
Yeah.
I was playing that at Edinburgh because there was no one else there to do it at the time. I enjoyed it at Edinburgh because I had a bit more freedom, but I wasn't a second five at test level. I got found out in a couple of games, and I really shouldn't have been playing there. I probably should have put my hand up and said, hey, look, I'm a fullback. I was 31, going on 32. If I'm honest, I was getting tired of the everyday grind, going to rugby training.
Especially over there too, eh, in the winters, it's freezing.
3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's pitch black, and, you know, like, I was just getting over it.
Yeah.
And it was time for a change. And originally I was going to come back to New Zealand. I always said before I left, because I ended up playing about 80-odd games for Otago, I thought, oh, it'd be cool to get 100.
Yeah.
And there wasn't many guys who were going over. They'd stay overseas and retire.
Yeah.
Not a lot of them are coming back and having another crack.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, if it wasn't a Otago, I'd nice to go and play maybe 50 games for South Canterbury or something.
Yeah.
But then Leon McDonald, he was at Yamaha, and he'd been there for, I think, a year, and he was having troubles with his wee fella, you know, going to school. And and it's pretty tough for kids over in Japan. So he decided to leave, and then the opportunity just popped up, and I was leaving Scotland, and, yeah.
Sure, Japan, just all worked out.
Yeah, just all sort of worked out. So I ended up going to Yamaha Motor Company and playing for a couple of seasons.
Sure, 2 years there.
2 years, yeah. Yeah, I probably could have had another one. My wife fell pregnant, so it was time to come home. We always wanted.
Was that with your first?
Yeah, that was the first one. Yeah, and it was just time.
Yeah,
and I'd sort of not given up my rugby ambitions.
Yeah,
but it was just. The jerseys were getting too tight for a start, Jimmy, so time to get rid of that one. But I just had enough. And I wanted to try. I was sort of moving on to the next part of my life and you know, having kids and doing things. So, yeah.
Did you have plans there for that next part of your life?
Not really.
Yeah.
Nah, not really. I struggled there at the start. I didn't know what I was going to do. I had a couple of different things, maybe looking at one of the owl houses, but that never really worked out. And then I had done a bit of work while I was in Dunedin for a company here in town, actually, in Christchurch, called JW Sport, and they were selling sports uniforms, corporate uniforms and that. So I did a little bit of work while I was playing rugby professionally. And that was more just put people in contact with, you know, hey, you need some hoodies or whatever it is. So I did that outside of rugby because I just couldn't do rugby all the time.
Yeah.
I need something else. And I knew that if, you know, one injury and I was gone, so I had to go and do something just a wee bit different. So that opportunity came up. So it was a business here in town, JW Sport. He was wanting to retire, and he offered me the chance to buy the business. So I bought into that and came back to Christchurch. So with not really knowing what I was doing, but
how far was this post footy? How long?
Pretty much straight after I finished. Yeah. Okay. 2007 came back. Pretty much got off the plane on a Saturday, started work on Monday.
Yeah.
And, it was a bit scary. And hindsight's a great thing, obviously, but, you know, I wish I'd probably learnt a bit more or, you know, business. It's all well and good owning a business, but there's a whole lot of stuff that goes with it that I knew nothing about.
So. You've obviously learnt on the run because, obviously, very successful now. You've Want to explain what how you've got to where you are now with Impact's
Impact, well, it's taken a while, to be fair. So I had JW Sport for a while, and then the opportunity to merge into and I wanted to get a hold of the monogramming part of it, because that was the big part of what we did.
Yeah.
So we, you know, embellished all the gear that we did.
Yeah.
So it was a chance to do that. I actually started off with a company called Tsunami Sportswear. There's a guy, Andrew Chambers.
Yes, yeah.
Andrew was I met him up in Hong Kong, just a champion man. And but then his wife got a job up in Taranaki.
Yeah.
So he was coming over and he said, oh, look, I'm going to sort of take that part over. I said, totally understand. So we finished up amicably. He's a real good man. And I had to do something. I had all these clients. So I started up Impact with Chris England. Big Scotty played over 100 games for Canterbury and played smart man, went down and played for the Hondas for a year. and so we were working together and so we started up Impact Apparel. And it was really to cover, at the time, all the Tsunami customers that I had.
Mm.
And so we've sort of built that up over a period of time. It's been about 4 years now. And, and now we're starting to do hit pads and, you know, a bit of other stuff as well. So it's
been going massive now.
Yeah, well, we're trying to, mate. It's like anything, you know, we're learning as we're going as but it's also... we're not just rugby. We've tried to get into other areas.
Yeah.
You know, we've made mistakes as we've gone, as one does. We try to minimise those as much as we can, but we've got some pretty cool stuff to offer. And myself and Chris have both come from backgrounds of club. You know, club rugby's it's bloody tough for clubs at the moment. They're struggling money-wise. They're struggling with numbers. And they want to make it easy, so when they do get on the field, it's a one-stop shop. So that's what I'm trying to achieve. Yeah, it's cool.
And where do you see it in sort of 5-10 years? What's the big plans for it?
At the moment, luckily enough, we've got a really good guy in Dunedin. He's doing a bit of stuff for us down there, Kurt. And then I've got a young fella up in Palmy North, Matt, who's been bloody good.
Yeah.
So they've bought in. And we'd like to maybe put someone up in maybe Wellington and then up in Auckland and try and cover the New Zealand anyway.
Yeah.
And so, look, we could try and aim for the stars and try and get, you know, all the big provinces. That would be great. But, you know, we're small steps and we're just trying to make sure that we're, you know, looking after the clubs really well and doing that part right, because it's pretty tough out there.
Doing a bloody good job. And how did the Sky commentary come about? When did that come in? And was that always something?
No, it wasn't, actually, to be fair. I met Mel Robinson over at Hong Kong Sevens. And she was in the same hotel. I just got yarned to her at the bar there one night, and she knew a mate of mine really well. So we just got chatting, and she said, oh, you should give the commentating a crack. I said, well, never even thought about it.
Yeah.
And I didn't think about it anymore, and about 3 or 4 months later, I got a phone call from Sky saying, oh, do you want to come and give it a go? So I remember going and standing behind Johnny Preston. It was actually me and Razor, and we went and stood behind...
Was Razor learning to do it as well?
He had a crack as well.
Was it?
He obviously picked a better path. And I went that way. So, we stood behind and watched JP, who was an expert, and then got the chance. And really got chucked a microphone and a program and said, go for it. So there was a lot of learning the names pretty quick.
Yeah.
And still can't get any more right. But it's cool fun. It's kept me in the rugby mix.
Yeah.
Which I really love. I love that community part.
Yeah.
And I've met some bloody cool people. So it's been really good.
What were your nerves like before your debut behind the mic?
Not good, mate. Not good at all. I think I read the program about 100 times. It was, put it this way, luckily it wasn't Samoa playing or Tonga, because trying to get some of those names out was really tough. But I'm sure some of the guys' parents hated them when they named them, because some of the names you go, God almighty, that's bloody tough. But and you want to do that right too.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You don't want to muck it up for the guys, because, you know, I suppose it was like me when you watch yourself on TV, but, you know, getting the guys' names wrong is not cool. So, but it is tougher when you got to do it in a hurry, you know.
Do they coach you on that? Like, I've always wondered that. Do the commentators get coaching on how to pronounced
name? Look, to be fair, it's got better, a lot better. When I first started,
Have a go.
Have a crack. and we were probably lucky because there was some outstanding, you know, Grant Nisbet, Golden Tonsils, one of the best.
Yeah.
Ken Laban was a champ, or is a champ.
Yeah.
And he helped me out a heap. Willie Losey, he was outstanding as well. So we had guys around that were had been doing it a while, and they were really great help. But it was a lot of just get in there and have a crack, which I quite enjoyed.
Yeah. And how's it work for you now? Do you just make yourself available for whenever?
Yeah, just available whenever. Yeah, yeah. pretty relaxed, to be fair. Look, I'm probably a wee bit the other way, Jimmy. I'm going out the other end. You know, there's guys that are coming off playing overseas now, playing in the game at that level.
Yeah.
You know, the game's definitely changed. The rule, not necessarily rules, but certainly the way that the teams approach it. And I think there's some younger guys now coming through who, you know, they're finishing up retiring, have, you know, Yizzy Dags of this world.
You know,
they've been in that sort of environment for a while, and I'm probably heading out the other end. So I've had a great 10, 12 years doing it, mate. It's been bloody great fun. Oh, I'm still hanging in there, don't worry. I'm off to the West Coast next week. Can't wait. And I enjoy it because there's some cool people around the rugby environment, and it keeps me in touch.
Did you ever have any ambition to get behind that, call the game from up top?
I always wanted to give that a crack one day, but I just don't know whether it's a hell of a skill. It really is.
Yeah.
And you'd probably have to ease your way into it. And I've been lucky. I've sat beside the best.
Mm.
You watch Grant do it, and Nisbo was just. You know, the amount of time and effort that goes into their preparation and
it's a big job.
It really is, man. They put a lot of time and effort, and that's outside of what they're doing normally too. Yeah. You know, and we even just guys standing sideline, we've got to put a bit of work in too, and know your players. But that commentator, and it happens fast.
Yeah,
you know, it comes out real fast, so you've got to get it right.
Yeah.
So I would have liked to have given a go, but I think that one might have passed me.
You think it has? Oh, mate, maybe at West Coast this weekend.
That's right, I'm
give
just
it
hoping,
a crack.
I think I'm going with Donnie Bell. I'm just hoping Donnie sort of doesn't blow up on me and I'll be sweet.
Well, mate, as always we do on this podcast, we go to our questions from the Instagram, and a popular man like yourself is coming with plenty. First one is, tell the story of when you crashed your car.
Oh, probably keep that one to myself. Just piss poor driving.
Driving Toddy's car, was it?
Oh, mate. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. No, look, I that was embarrassing, man. I didn't hit it that long either. That was the worst part.
How were you 16 or 17?
No, it was just, it was just dumb. Yeah. We'll just leave it down
here. Okay, next one. Hardest player to tackle.
Jonah.
Easily.
Without doubt. Without doubt. And to be fair, the next one was Damien Cowie.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, Jonah was just so tough, and because he just had that big massive strain on him. And you'd never, I remember Kevin Gloag saying to me, you know, you've got to take his space away. You know, get up there fast to take his space away. I said, mate, try and tackle him. Seen the size of him, and he can run about 11 second 100 metre, you know.
Yeah,
I'm sitting there scuttling behind him, so Jonah was tough. Tana Umanga was real tough as well,
yeah.
You know, Tana was just so strong and
he had a good step, too.
That's right, And in fairness, you know, that whole bloody Hurricanes backline were pretty handy,
Cully
as well. Once again, I think I only bloody shook his hand a few times afterwards, but you know they were outstanding.
Yeah.
And that's where the going back, some of those All Black boys, they had an awesome back three.
Yeah, some talent there, some legends. Okay, best player you played with?
Goldie would definitely be Goldie, one of the best. Yeah, purely because of his skill level, and he read the game so well. He had the ball on a string sometimes. You know, you saw him in South Africa in 97 where he chased, caught it, scored. You know, that stuff, to do it at that pace. And Cully was another guy.
Yeah.
I didn't play with Cully, but played against him plenty of times, and he was a freak.
Yeah.
Absolute freak. Wasn't big. Strong as an ox. I think the one part of him is probably one of the best bench presses in the team. But he was just fast, and he could change direction quick.
Yeah.
That was really hard to defend.
Yeah.
And you know, to have a guy like that in your team was pretty special.
Some special players. Okay, next one, best court session you're involved in. You would have been involved in plenty of good ones.
I distinctly remember one, and we had Mark Ellis. He came up. It was 96.
Yeah.
And we were up in Auckland, and the Warriors had played that night. Was it Warriors? It might have been the SC, might have been the Kiwis had played.
Oh yeah,
because Johnny Timmy was there as well. Johnny Timmy, one of the best you've ever met, absolute legend. So they came to the court session, and we'd had plenty. I think we either played North Harbour or Auckland. Come here, or we lost. So we head into the court session, and we ripped into it. But every time Macca came up with. Why he even got put in charge, I don't know, but every time you buffed your stubby,
yeah,
you had to get up and play it. So there's bottles everywhere around the room and smashed, and it was just like, well, everyone's shot. I remember walking outside and Johnny Timu was in the garden, and that was at the end of the court session. So you can tell you there how well that went. I woke up in the morning with a mate of mine that from Kaikoura, he'd come up to watch,
yeah,
and he was in Auckland for something. And I woke up in the morning and we had the ironing board out, and it was in smithereens. We were trying to surf. Why we were trying to do that, I don't know, Jimmy, but I distinctly remember breaking it. So, and I don't think I paid for it either. So I was going to blame him anyway. So yeah,
blame him.
Court sessions were probably the downs. In hindsight,
yeah,
we probably shouldn't have had as many as we did, but you knew you had a good one when you got into the third keg.
Yeah.
And that was going good. So and we did that a few times.
What about Mark Ellis? You mentioned there. What was he like as a character?
Oh, just next level. Hilarious, man. Yeah. Yeah. He was just so sharp.
Yeah.
And I mean, we came back after he did his leg and he played 2000. He came back and he ended up playing fullback. I actually ended up sitting on the bench quite a bit that year. And you know, Macca was a better player than I was.
Yeah.
But he was just around the team, just always joking. And it was – people gravitated to him.
Yeah.
But he was also – it wasn't just him. He would, you know, he'd talk to everyone. And he just had a knack of – having everyone in stitches,
yeah.
And he was just a cracking dude, and great to be in his team as well, because yeah, he could play some footy too. Sure, he was a good rugby player, yeah, real good. But afterwards was the best part. That's really, really came into life. His own.
You and him both, by the sounds of
things. Yeah.
Okay, next question: did you really say mucked up when commentating, or did you actually say fucked up?
I did say mucked up.
Was it?
Honest to God, yeah. I'll put my hand up there. It did sound like it, because I'd gone, when that happened, I felt pretty shitty about it afterwards, but when it happened...
Was this a schoolboy game?
Yeah, it was. It was Christ's Boys, St. I think it was Christ.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, the kid from Christ's Boys kicked to the corner and it went dead.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy I was commentating with, he put his microphone down and was writing something down.
Yeah.
And of course I better say something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I went, oh no, he's really mucked that up. But I had my microphone quite a while, because when you got your commentating mic, you meant to have it up here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I had it sitting out here, so it didn't really probably sound the clearest. And I should have said he fucked up. And so I of course I said it, and then I heard him, yeah, because you got the producers and everything out in the truck and everything, and I heard them go, oh, and I thought they were talking about the kick. So anyway, game finished, I left. I went down to a mate of mine's wife passed away, unfortunately, and I went to the funeral, and it was down in Wanaka.
Yeah.
And I ended up at Lake Hawea, and there was no coverage where we were. So I had 2 days down there, no coverage, having a few beers, da, da, da. And then we finally, my wife and I got in the car to head back to Christchurch, and my phone started going nuts. And it was like Ring Sky Sport, da 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 da. And then I looked at stuff, and here I am with a big picture of me going on about me swearing. And I'm going, holy shit. And it really kicked off. Yeah. I was like, oh, shit, shit, shit. So I rang Sky, and the media lady was great. She said, oh, look, we've gone through the coverage again, and it sounds like it, but we know you haven't said it. And I said, well, honestly, I'll put my hand, if I'd said it, I would have just put my hand up and say, look, I've. So I said, look, one guy that's got to be spoken to is the kid.
Yeah.
So I rang the school, got a hold of the manager of the team, and I said, oh, look, mate, I'm really sorry, but have you got this guy's name? I want to talk to him. And it's really bad. I can't remember his name, but he was a hell of a nice kid on the phone. So I rang him up and I said, hey, look, buddy, it's Brendan Laney here. I've got to apologise. I didn't say it, but it's certainly come out like that. And I said, look, I've kicked plenty of those dead, mate. So I said, you know, and the rest of you, you played fantastically well. So I was backing you all the way.
Yeah.
But I said, I apologise if it's come across that way. And he said, oh, no, it's all right, mate. We all had a laugh about it in the preview. And I said, oh, that's right. And he said, and to be fair, he said, I did fuck it up. And I was like, mate, what a champ.
Yeah.
What a great kid. But look, it was just, it came out and it certainly sounded like it, but I definitely didn't do it.
Oh, mate.
I'd put my hand up.
Yeah, for that. I really would. And good on you for giving him a call.
Well, I had to because it wasn't freer on the guy.
Yeah.
And he'd played well too. There was just one thing that just didn't go quite right. Yeah. So.
Oh, good stuff. Okay, next one. Favourite memory in the Scotland jersey?
There was one game we played against South Africa in 2004, and they were number two in the world at the time, two or three, and we were sitting about eighth, and we played them in our autumn tests, which was November. It was my birthday. It was 16th of November. We ran out, and I was playing 12 that day.
You love playing 12.
Yeah, and I was like, mate, what am I doing in 12? I'm playing against South Africa, da da da. But I was goal kicking.
Oh, yeah.
So, and we ended up beating them. I remember Corne Klecker was the captain, and I held him up over the line, one part of it, and he got up and gave me a clip around the ear, and we had a bit of a push and shove, and I was like, mate, you're a dickhead. He called me a dickhead. And then we went down to the other end of the field, and I had a shot at goal right in front. Half time. As soon as I kicked, it was half time.
Yeah.
And I missed it.
Oh, true.
And he ran straight past me and gave me a mouthful. You useless prick, you fat, and all this sort of crap. So, anyway, second half, we ended up beating him, and I ran straight past Corner. And I said, what'd you say? And he chased me down the tunnel. I was like, trying to get down the old tunnel quicker than usual. So, but we ended up beating him, and it was just a great day out. And no disrespect, but no one was expecting us to beat South Africa.
Yeah.
I don't think some of the guys in the team weren't expecting us to win that game. But we just, you know, in a game, it just
everything
clicked.
Yeah.
You know, we trained that week and it was it's quite funny. It's a different thing when we played England. The attitude to an English Six Nations game or an England game was totally different to playing a South Africa or an All Blacks. The English game, there was just something about it. The guys in the Scotland team flicked a different switch, whereas they weren't, I've got to be careful how I say it, they probably weren't expecting to go out and beat the All Blacks or beat South Africa. But, mate, they were going to go out there and kill England. And it was a totally different kettle of fish again.
Yeah,
it really was. It was quite strange. I found that quite strange. But I could understand the history behind it.
Yeah,
But the South African game, we just, everything, you know, just clicked.
One of those games.
Yeah, it really was.
Chasing you down the tunnel.
Yeah, mate, I was quick down the tunnel with
you. It sort of goes on to the next question. Who do you think is going to win the Rugby World Cup?
Well, look, I suppose at the moment, if you're a betting man, France at home is going to be really tough to beat. South Africa are going to be tough to beat. Ireland being number one in the world at the moment, they'll be extremely tough to beat over there. The way they performed in a couple of their warm-up games have been bloody hard. They'll be hard to beat. I really like the way the All Blacks are tracking at the moment. Just the way that they've performed, particularly when, you know, the old acid's been on them.
Yeah.
It really has.
All those four teams are on one side of the pool.
That's the thing, eh? It's crazy. It really is. And that's one thing that worries me a little bit is our pool build-up. You know, we've got the French first up and then...
Yeah, a hell of a quarter-final.
That's right. So we're going to have to really perform and hope, you know, injury-wise, you know, we get through, and I just like the way the guys have gone out there and performed because, geez, they've played some good rugby. And everyone's been eyeing them. And, you know, to be fair to Fozzie, he's got a bit of pressure on him too.
Yeah.
So I think they've handled that really, really well. But look, even if they went out and play South Africa in this last one and lose,
yeah,
no one will give a shit if they get to the end of it and win it. So yeah. I just hope that they go out there and perform really well.
Yeah.
But I think we're good enough to do it. Ireland and France are going to be tough to beat.
Yeah, that first game's going to be an absolute beauty against
Absolute ripper. I suppose we haven't even mentioned Aussie.
Yeah.
You know, they could be a bit one of those games that could tip someone up. Scotland and that one there in particular. The Tonga match is going to be huge for them. The South African match is going to be huge for them. Mm-hmm. That'll be a really interesting pull.
Yeah.
I'd love to see the Scottish boys get up because, gee, they're playing some good
rugby. Yeah, right.
Oh, it's been really awesome to watch. And from a Scottish point of view,
from a true Scotsman like yourself,
they'd be bloody brilliant. Yeah. Absolutely brilliant.
Who do you support when Scotland play the All Blacks?
Oh, I'm Scottish. That's my team. I was a real honour to play 20 tests for them. And certainly.
Okay, next one. Best Otago after party.
98. 98 was a ripper. We won the NPC in 98 and then we ended up back at the Guardies Sports Tavern.
Yeah.
I remember walking in and we actually couldn't get in. I had the big NPC trophy, the big one. It fits about four jugs. Just out of interest. And I remember walking into the Guardies, but I had it in front of me like that.
Yeah.
And next minute it got taken off me. And I was like, oh shit, it's gone. But we actually physically couldn't get in there. It was chocker. I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
The only other time it's been chocker was National Nude Day, but it was absolutely.
With Mark Ellis running the counter.
Yeah, yeah. And it got taken behind the bar and filled up, obviously. When we finally got in there, that whole place was absolutely humping, but it wasn't just in it, it was outside. There was people on the streets. And that was one of the bigger ones, I must admit. That went for about 3 days. And we had to be at the boardroom. I mean, we had to be at the boardroom for like your mad Monday, which ended up being the Sunday.
Yeah.
You had to be there at 10 o'clock. If you weren't there, 11 o'clock, sorry. If you weren't there by 11 o'clock, it was a jug every minute you were late.
Far out.
And there was about three boys that smoked in a bit late. And I'll tell you what, that hurt. And the most impressive part, and I can't remember whether that, I'm pretty sure it was, but Calvin Middleton. Now, Calvin Middleton's he's a tough bugger.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't call him a massive drinker, but I tell you what, he must have smoked 7 or 8 jugs that day and never missed a beat. It was real impressive. Really, I don't think he's ever done that ever again.
7 minutes late.
Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. I've never seen it before in my life, but it was impressive. Very impressive.
Oh, times have definitely changed.
They certainly have, yeah.
Okay, last question. Best piece of advice you have for a Waterlad listener?
Oh, look, if it's purely just around rugby, I'm just got to go out there and enjoy it. Especially young fellas. I think there's a lot of pressure on the young guys in professional environment. But first and foremost, it's a game to enjoy. And that's why I love playing it. It was just great fun. I love the guys in it. Love the people around it. And at the end of the day, I suppose like anything, if an environment is good and you're enjoying it, you play your best rugby. Mm. The other one is life short, mate. It goes pretty bloody quick. I'm 50 years old this year, and it feels like yesterday that I was running around on a rugby field. But I can tell you now, you get up in the morning, make a few different noises. You bend over to tie your shoes up and make a few different noises. And now I've got kids in there, you get a bit of enjoyment out of going and watching them play sport. But I tell you what, it goes like that.
Yeah.
And you really got to go out there and give everyone a crack. That's what I think. Mm. I've done my fair share.
Mate, you definitely have. And going through this podcast, you just realise how much you've actually done. And
It's a bit like that. Yeah, it's been a bit bizarre, really. It's not something you don't sit down and
reflect.
You don't. You usually just cop a bit of shit from your mates, you know. But it's been pretty cool.
Yeah, pleasure to have you on, a true legend of the game, and hearing your story and some of that, I mean, your Scotland debut definitely stands out as playing the All Blacks twice in a week and your first week over there, it's one of those moments where you're just like...
Honest to God, mate, I never ever thought I'd ever sit down and say that. And yeah, it was bizarre, really bizarre. But like, something I could tell my grandkids about one day, maybe if I get there that long, if I keep on making noises, getting out of the chair and whatnot.
No, but you're a true legend, true lad, and really appreciate you giving up your time and coming on.
Awesome, Jimmy. Nice, mate. Thanks very much.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening. And if you've got this far, I'm guessing you enjoyed the episode. So if you did, please give it a share if you can. And also cheers to our mates at Spates for sponsoring this episode.